Hello, and thank you for joining the Connection Therapy Podcast. This is a podcast about the craft of psychotherapy, and we seek to support those who strive to improve their craft by sharing research about the science and stories about the art of psychology. Together, we will explore these findings so you can decide how you want to apply them to benefit your practice. At Connection Therapy, I host book clubs twice a year for those interested in the human and animal connection. We are currently reading Horse Brain, Human Brain, The Neuroscience of Horsemanship by Dr. Janet Jones. Dr. Jones applies brain science to the training of horses and riders. She earned her PhD from UCLA and taught the neuroscience of perception, language, memory, and thought from a human perspective for 23 years. She then incorporates that education along with her experience in working with and training horses and travels all over the world explaining what she calls brain-based horsemanship. And her book has already helped myself and the participants in our book club. We frequently discuss how a lot of us have been around horses since we were children and yet not understood many of the things Janet shares in her book. She shares both similarities and differences between horses and humans. And for me, it's been especially relevant to consider the differences between species. So many things I've taken for granted. I mean, it's understandable that horses would think differently, but I never considered that they see and perceive things differently than humans. I mean, maybe I consider that since their eyes are placed differently on their heads, they might, but actually, as Janet explains, vision is so complicated, they see some things similar to the way humans do and some things not. And my takeaway from this has been that shared experiences like trail riding, for example, are a way more trusting endeavor than I ever realized. Trusting from the horse's perspective, which I'll explain in a little bit. But this is why I'm sharing her work on the podcast. Whether you're interested in partnering with horses for your therapy work or not, I believe the awareness of how much trust it takes for species to interact will increase your awareness overall about human interactions. After all, there's a lot we take for granted about other humans that might not be correct either. And if you have an experience like I did, the whole thing just makes me have so much compassion for anyone trying to relate to another being, whether they're part of their own species or not. And at the end of this, I'll explain something you can take away from this episode and start practicing in your therapy work this week, if you choose, and it will probably change outcomes for your patients. Let's start first by considering one of the visual differences between species. Dr. Jones has in her book a chapter called visual acuity, which, as she explains, is the ability to make tiny discriminations in detail while focusing on something in the center of the visual field. Reading is a great example, as she explains, for humans. This gets more complex as we consider that horses' eyesight is not actually as strong as humans. Normal human acuity is 20/20. We've heard of that. For horses, it's a range between 20/30 and 20/60. And in case you, like me, forgot how that works, essentially, she's explaining that if a horse has a 20/30 vision and we have 20/20 vision, that horse has to be closer to the object to be able to see it. Because what we can see from 30 feet away, the horse then can only see from 20 feet away. And that's the best side of the range for horse vision. They can also be up in the 20/60 range, which for a human, she explains, is a 200% impairment compared to their rider's human vision. So, thinking about trail riding or a very popular sport of jumping, It takes tremendous trust. When I read this part of the book, my heart just went out to every horse and rider who attempt obstacles. That horse is trusting while you're on their back that you know when to ask them to jump, because they can't see things as well as we can, even when we're further from the object because we're riding and they're on, you know, their heads are closer to the ground. I was amazed by that. And really, as I mentioned earlier, had compassion for horses trusting humans enough to get in a trailer. You know, it's hard for them to find the step up for a trailer and going into dark barns or dark areas. There's really great examples that she explains that our eyes can pick up differences more easily. And I'm kind of generalizing here a couple of the vision chapters, but essentially the bottom line for me is that horses place a lot of trust in their riders and handlers because it takes longer for their eyes to adjust, and or sometimes they just don't see the distance like we do. So that's one of the differences that made me really start considering what horses give in terms of trust when they partner with humans and exist in our multiple environments that we ask them to participate in. So that specific example was visual acuity. And that's one of the differences between our vision capacities and horses. Now I want to talk about one that is similar. It's harder to test in horses, but as much as we can make sense of it, it seems pretty clear that humans and horses share what is called visual search asymmetry. And this is one of the things I really appreciate about Janet Jones, is she talks about how she likes to use plain language to describe these things. And the term she uses here is called pop out. And it simply refers to our awareness of things that pop out. For example, berries on a bush. We find those because they pop out from the greenery on the rest of the bush, and our eyes can pick up the color that berries usually are. As I understand the term, it refers to the fact that we have a preference for finding the things that pop out. In other words, our awareness is drawn to the red berries more than the greenery on the rest of the bush. And this results in an asymmetrical way that our vision operates. In other words, we're kind of heavily weighted at looking at or searching for things that pop out than we are about the lack or non-existence of something that is not popping out to our awareness. We search out these differences or things that pop out more predominantly. And as the example suggests, it is believed this ability aids our survival, which is why both species likely have this characteristic in common. Horses, for example, as Dr. Jones shares, are going to be much more attuned to the predator walking toward them than they would be if the prairie was empty of visitors. So, what does this have to do with our relationships? Well, as she explained, the predominance for searching for things that pop out make us overall attuned to the behaviors of others. Our horses, our loved ones, that do things that pop out as concerning or irk us or problematic. It appears that this tendency then translates to like a hyper awareness of when horses, for example, do something we don't want them to do. And the insight she shared that she had is that it also has the corresponding effect of making us miss when the horse doesn't do the problem behavior. So again, if there's a lack in the environment and things aren't happening, we're less likely to pay attention to that. And sometimes if the horse isn't doing the problem behavior, we might miss that they're not doing that behavior because it's not popping out, if you will. We might miss it when it's not done. And we might miss the opportunity to endorse and encourage our horse for doing what we actually would like them to do. And this can cause a lot of confusion for horses because we don't pause to praise and reinforce the absence of the unwanted behavior. So they get where it's hard to understand how we do want them to interact with us. Dr. Jones suggests we do what she calls seek the good in what our horses are doing and encourage and reinforce it, which has the benefit of happier relationships in large part because our expectations of our horses are clear and the horses understand what they are. And usually any social being like humans or horses that gets praised and encouraged is going to continue doing the thing that got them the praise and encouragement. That's just something we all do as social creatures. Does this sound familiar? It did for me too. For those of us who studied psychology, there's a lot of history in our field about the ideas of shaping behaviors. So I went looking for a comparable idea, or at least one of the many, and I ran across the Gottman Institute. And if you're not familiar, the Gottman Institute was founded by Drs. John and Julie Gottman. And from their website, their mission is to foster and sustain greater love and health in relationships. And I've admired them for a long time because they spend a lot of time doing observation and research in relationships, which is how they come to many of their recommendations for couples and family therapy. And they have a blog article that explained exactly the human version of what Janet Jones was explaining in horse and human relationships. But before I do that, let me just highlight some of my favorite things about the Gottman Institute. As I mentioned, has to do with how much research they've done. In fact, they can tell in one of their studies, they did a lot of work to understand different factors in relationships to the point that they could predict to 90% accuracy whether or not a couple would stay together over time. It's really impressive what they're up to. So I'll put a link in the show notes if you'd like to learn more. But what is relevant to this episode is their discussion. They have a blog post here titled, How to Improve Your Relationships in 24 Hours. And they have 10 tips to help you do that. It's another thing I like about them is they not only do research, they have helpful things for both practicing mental health therapists and people who want to take their findings and put them into practice in their relationships right away. They have a great website that has lots of resources for doing that. But I did find in this blog post the relevancy to what Dr. Jones is talking about in the human-horse relationships. Gottman's explain, human beings are wired to notice the negative things and potential danger in our environment. I believe that's the pop out or visual search asymmetry concept. And they go on, this is what has kept our species alive for so long. The problem with this is, however, if we don't actively work to notice the positive things in our life, especially with our partner, the negative will take over and consume us and the relationship, end quote. So then they go on to explain these tips that they have, but this is what I wanted to just kind of ground this in modern day practice, that in human-horse relationships, it's a factor that affects the ways horses understand their humans and what the expectations and hopes are of how horses will act. And it happens in human-to-human relationships as well. So to me, what we're finding here is one more way that learning how to relate to other species, such as horses in this example, can help us learn how to relate better in our own human-to-human relationships. This is something that drawing focus to it and practicing can then be something we bring into our relationships. So, about that idea of how mental health therapists can help patients with this right now, this week, if you choose to do so, let's transition to talk about that. So what is the thing you can start doing this week and improve outcomes for your patients? Well, in my experience, no matter why people come to therapy, almost always one of the things they could benefit from support with is improving their social relationships, be it in this case with loved ones or even with work colleagues. Almost universally, no matter why someone is in therapy, improving their social relationships could benefit whatever brought them in for support. I think it's true for all of us. We're social creatures. We can always benefit from increased social skills. And following on from that, one of the near universal skills in social relationships is cooperation. So one way that I put this concept into practice in my own work is I do a lot of interactive activities with children that I see, and this works for adults as well. But what I do is I intentionally try to highlight cooperative behaviors. It's easier in interactive activities like building puzzles together, but no matter when or what I see happen, I try to endorse and encourage a cooperative behavior when I see it. For the most part, I'm a psychodynamically oriented therapist, which means that I want whatever is causing that person's stress outside of therapy, I want to pay attention for when that happens in therapy with me. And that way the person gets to practice with a safe adult who can help them understand relationships a little bit better. So when I see cooperative behavior, I try to endorse that. For example, if someone is building a puzzle with me and we are looking for a piece and we're both sort of searching together and, you know, jointly celebrating when we find it, these are ways that small cooperative acts can be encouraged and endorsed and then practiced in session and used for that person outside of session, which in most, if not all cases, is going to benefit them in their social relationships. And in my own work, I've been doing this for a while, actually, since I started working with children. When in my training, we learned something similar, and I have had so much success with it that I've practiced it over the years with all age groups. And when I was reading this information from Janet Jones and the Gottman Institute, it occurred to me that it fits in these categories. It's just simply an endorsement, a noticing, an observation of a cooperative behavior. And it kind of, to me, I actually learned it as it was phrased, acknowledging good intentions. And it's just this beautiful way to kind of have common ground on the cooperative nature of therapeutic work, even if there's a misunderstanding. So acknowledging good intentions means I trust that whatever you're doing is probably well-intended, and I'm going to acknowledge that so that you'll do more well-intended things. Not necessarily does that mean that therapy never has problems, but if we're both working toward similar outcomes on the patient's behalf, then that skill practiced in therapy can be translated outside of therapy and immediately start benefiting them. And it's something so simple. It's much like we're talking about here. It's hard to notice unless you're specifically looking for it. And I have had really positive results by focusing on this over the years in my work, and I hope you will too. I hope you'll join us again for future explorations in the field of psychology. And if you'd like to take a step further, there are additional ways to obtain more education and support on our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com. While there, you will find information about the authors and studies featured in the podcast episodes. Also, you will see a schedule of live trainings I offer on the topics featured in the podcast. And you will find information about the Connection Community, a growing group of mental health clinicians dedicated to the study and practice of psychotherapy. please check out our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com, to learn more. Thanks. Until next time.